Recording for our Educators Forum for broadcast May 28th and 31st. Well, hello and welcome to another program of Educators Forum, your date with the most talked about subject, education. We want to thank you for the support you've given the program and have given the forum so far with all the work it's been doing on the behalf of the teaching fraternity in Barbados. Today we have another special package for you. We have a chat with the public relations officer of the Barbados Association of Reading, Mr. Wilbert Morgan. We bring you another in the series of snapshots of our school. We have a heart-searching message for parents and a special feature when we talk with Mr. Patrick Frost as we look at the implications of the High Court ruling in the 8% pay cut for civil servants.
Make my life
Just to remind you before we talk with Mr. Morgan that our 8th National Educational Forum is scheduled for the 25th of June at Urson College Lecture Theatre. On this occasion, we'll be looking at the topic, the role of the Ministry of Education in fostering educational change. And the presenters will be former Chief Education Officer in the Ministry of Barbados here, Ministry of Education here in Barbados, Mr. Erskine Rawlings, former District Education Officer in England, Mr. George Vaughan, who is a member of the forum, Mrs. Margaret Cummings-Williams, who is a teacher at Queen's College and is strongly affiliated with the Barbados Secondary Teachers Union, and from the Ministry of Education, Mrs. Ida Mae Denny-Gittings. Of course, all members of the fraternity and the public are invited. With me now is Mr. Wilbert Morgan. Welcome to Educators Forum, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Farley.
Now, you are here because your association, the Barbados Reading Association, recently participated in the 37th annual convention of the International Reading Association, which was held in Orlando, Florida. First of all, let me congratulate your association for having been involved in this international event. Would you care to tell us how did it come about, Wilbert?
Well, the initial contact for us was made by Mrs. Julia Harris, who sometime in 1991, December to be exact, helped us to organize with the assistance of the International Reading Association a workshop entitled The Teaching of Comprehension. Initial contacts were made at that point, and when Mrs. Harris went back to her job in the States, she helped to make the contacts for us. She helped us with housing and transport in relation to getting to Orlando.
Now, how many members of your association actually participated in this international conference?
There were 7 members from the Barbados Barbados Region Association that took the trip up to Orlando. There were Mr. Lemuel Jordan from the Audiovisual Aids Officer, Mrs. Beverly Neblett last year, Chuta Erdison College. And there are some teachers from the inner system, Ms. Linton, Oriel Linton of Vauxhall Composite, Grace Ling Wiles of St. Giles Primary, Mary Combats of St. Bernard's Primary, Margaret Harding of Ellerton Primary, and of course, I teach at St. Lucie Secondary.
Now, I always like to find out, now what benefits did the association share having attended that conference?
Well, of course, we were looking at, as you recognize, we had people from right across the teaching fraternity in Barbados, and you were looking for different things, really. Of course, Mrs. Neblett Lashley was looking for information in relation to what she was doing at Hurdiston. Mr. Jordan, he was looking at audiovisual equipment, you know, the latest in technology that he can employ. I was looking myself at what was new in the secondary system, and there were the other teachers in the primary schools who were looking to see what they could get to enhance what they were doing there.
What was the theme of the conference?
The theme of the conference was probably literacy, yes, reading for a lifetime, the challenge of language diversity in the classroom.
A very interesting topic. Are there any things that really stand out in your mind, having attended that conference yourself, Mr. Morgan?
Yes, of course. I was impressed by what is happening in education generally. And you must keep in mind, when you think of the International Reading Association, that this is a body that is comprised of educators from all over the world, and they are the latest in what is available in education. I was very impressed with the novelties in the system. You know, there are a number of new things that I've been exposed to since I was there.
For example,
the whole point on making assessments in from discussions, making assessments out of the discussions. That is something that has impressed me. Other things of which I was impressed is the teaching approach that is current in the States now. I was impressed too with the use of technology, the kind of technology that is available and how it is employed in the classroom.
Having seen and having been exposed to the situation in the States, how do we compare in terms of our technology, in terms of reading? How do we compare?
Well, we have some way to go.
A long way to go, Mr. Morgan?
We are moving in the right direction, I think, from what I can glean from our system, but we still have somewhere to go to catch up.
What do you think would be necessary for us to start that process of catching up?
Well, first of all, we need the understanding of the administrators in the system. And then we need, of course, some retraining is necessary, in my view.
Mm-hmm. But I first wanted to congratulate the association for the work it has been doing as far as creating the consciousness of the importance of reading in the school curriculum. Now, how will the benefits which your association derive from having participated in this international conference be passed on to the teachers in the system, to the children in the classroom?
Yes, well, the members, some of the members have indeed been interviewed by the personnel at the Ministry of Education, and I gather from there that provision will be made for them to speak to the principals in the schools. I myself, I have arranged to undertake some
workshops
mm-hmm. at my school, which I hope would bring the members there a little more
up to date
with the kind of thing that I saw. And some of our members too are out speaking to not only teachers involved, but speaking to parents as well,
yes,
on what they can do to help their children along the road to literacy.
Because the whole question of recovering literacy and improving reading is everybody's business.
I would like to think so.
Is there one message you want to leave with fellow colleagues out there who are working hard in the classroom?
Yes, of course. And it is to redouble your efforts, because it is very worthwhile indeed. I was impressed by indeed one of the opening addresses to the convention by Mr. Mayor. And he established a relationship between what is happening in the classroom and crime in our society.
Interesting relationship.
And I seem to think that he was saying that those children that are neglected are usually the ones that commit the crime. And it is important to work on those children, to get them to think. And he's found that those children that can think higher order skills and analyze are the ones very often that stay out of the criminal activity in the society. So There is that kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that those in the field, those practitioners in the field should be conscious of that and should recognize the importance of the task that they're performing.
It's a task which says that we're supposed to produce readers and people who are literate and who will then have no alternative but to pursue that kind of course rather than turning to crime.
Yes, indeed it is.
Mr. Wilbert Morgan, the Public Relations Officer of the Barbados Association of Reading. Thank you very much, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks.
We now bring you another in the series of programs which we call Snapshots of Our School. And in this evening's program, we highlight the school which is called the St. Christopher Boys School. It is located in St. Christopher Christ Church, and we are told that it used to be called the Rockley School or the Below the Rocks Boys School. The exact date for its establishment is not known, but it is believed that it was established sometime in the early 19th century. And its previous sites include St. Christopher and an area called Below the Rocks. The first principal, or the one for which records exist, was Mr. W. E. Agard. There was also Mr. W. Nurse, and other principals include Mr. C. A. Phillips, Mr. George A. Warner, Mr. M.M. Lynch, Mr. C. Norgrove, Mr. C. Rochford, Mr. L.C. Cheltenham, and Mr. W.W. Alleen. The following persons also performed duties of acting head teacher at the school: Mr. G.A. Moore, between 1965 and 67, Mr. J. King, September 1971 to January 1972, Mr. C. Lowe, September 1978 to March 1979, and Mrs. J. Hamlin, recently 1989 to 1990. The school's motto is strive for excellence in whatever you do. And from a philosophical standpoint, the school seeks to help each student to realize his full potential academically, spiritually, socially, and physically. And it also seeks to create a sense of pride in each student. The current roll is 287 children, and there are 16 teachers. Among its major achievements, we are told that the school has been outstanding in the area of sports and games, especially cricket and football. And some persons outstanding in our society, for whom it is the alma mater, we have former Chief Justice of Barbados, Sir William Douglas, Mr. Big Bird Joel Garner, former Chief Education Officer, Mr. Erskine Rawlings. The current principal is Mr. John Ifill, who took up that post in 1981. And we're told that the building which housed the school at the current moment was a gift of the Canadian government, and it was officially opened on the 8th of September 1970 by His Excellency Mr. G.A. Raw, High Commissioner of Canada. Another educational institution that continues to touch the lives of thousands of Barbadians, the St. Christopher Boys School. And from the forum and from the fraternity, we say, carry on, St. Christopher Boys, carry on. Before we hear from Mr. Patrick Frost and we look at the implications of the 8% pay cut and the High Court ruling, I have a special message for parents, which I'm sure you're going to find very, very touching and heartrending. then an individual's criminal action leads to a fate of death by hanging or imprisonment, one often wonders who is to blame. Parents, perhaps? Teachers? The society? When mothers' bellies burn, as we say in Beijing, are they crying for themselves or for their sons? Richard Hoad, a few weeks ago in The Weekend Nation of Friday, April 17th, wrote under the title, "Don't Cry for Me, Mama Tina." Mama Tina, I see you crying and bawling and holding your belly next to my bed. The same way you was crying and bawling and holding your belly in the courtyard when I did get sent to prison. But you should know that this is not the time for crying, Mama Tina. The time for crying was long ago. And if you forget, let me tell you when it was. You remember how when I was a little boy, I could barely walk. One day, pull off the tablecloth and break a dish. And Grand slapped me on me hand. And I run to you with, "Mama Tina, Grand hit me." And you quarreled and tell she, "Never again you touch my child." That was time you should have cried, Mama Tina. Cause I learned that day that I could get away with anything so long as I call you by your pet name, Mama Tina. And when I used to skip school and go to the sea, you told the headmaster that I did suffer with asthma. And we used to laugh at how Miss Bisham got Bum Bum marching off to school come rain, come sun, and make him stay in and do homework. You should have cried then too, Mama Tina. Cause Bum Bum now studying accountancy, and he got a bundle of CSC certificates that Miss Bisham got framed and hang up in the house. What you got to hang up for me, Mama Tina? 7 convictions and 3 months in jail. But you're always making it easy for me, Mama Tina. Like the day when the headmaster catch me and go up breaking the school windows and give me some lashes. And the evening you went and brass him up proper and tell him if he ever do it again, you can give a body slam. You remember the Good Friday when Uncle come down from Arch Hall and say he taking me to see the crucifixion at the Empire? And he call you in the kitchen and whisper how me and the other fellas they plan to go to Kung Fu Killers at the Bridgetown. And you went out and tell Uncle how he got headache and can't go. You remember that, Mama Tina? That was another time you should have cried. At 14, I was done with school and went as an apprentice to Mr. Garns to learn motor mechanic. And after he complained how he made me clean up the yard and put away all the tools on evenings, you say your son ain't in the yard sweeper and tell me come home and rest myself. That is when I start hanging out with the rude boys at the corner, Mama Tina. And even the Reverend warned you that I getting into bad company and that the gang's using 16 and 17 year olds as hitmen because they can't get hanged. But you tell them that boys will be boys and you can't keep children in glass houses, in a glass case. You remember, Mama Tina? And when they start to bring in new clothes and new shoes and radio and video, you never ask a question where you get your money from. But you didn't know, and you should have cried then. And it went from bad to worse. The day the police come to search the house, you tell me go out to them, and I was frightened. But they didn't find nothing because you throw the herb in the toilet and hide the gun. I didn't even know you knew you had them things, Mama Tina. But then they hold me for going in a woman's house in St. Joseph. And you went in the shop and bragged that if you got the whore, you must get the best lawyer for your son. That is another time you should have cried, Mama Tina. But I went to prison. And I get to read the Bible and it showed me that if you train a tree from young, it will grow the right way. And that he that spareth the rod hateth his son. And I realized that you never even trained me. So you must have hated me. But it was too late for me to change my ways. Anyway, it's my turn now. Cause you're bawling and you're weeping and I hear upon deading. And all going through my brain is, God, I hate this woman that raised me up like this. So you isn't fooling anybody, Mama Tina. You know very well that the gang boys only beat me up because I keep back some of the money from the last job to help you pay for the new dinette set. So don't cry for me, Mama Tina. Cry for your blasted self. The recent High Court ruling by the Chief Justice in relation to the 8% cut of civil servant salary has virtually sent a panic among civil servants, and of course, that includes teachers. I had a recent chat with Patrick Frost of the Coalition, who is also the General Secretary of the Barbados Secondary Teachers Union, in terms not so much of the ruling itself, but the implications for teachers.
First of all, it is our understanding that the Chief Justice has contended that the Civil Establishment Act of 1949, which allowed the Minister certain powers to vary the emoluments of public officers, that is an existing act under the Constitution, and therefore the 1991 Act, that is the Reduction of Public Service Emoluments Act, would be regarded as a modification of that Act. And since the existing Act was protected by the Constitution, this would have allowed, therefore, the salaries of public officers to be varied in that way. He also indicated that Section 112 of the Constitution specifies certain persons by name, and by office rather, not by name. That's the Auditor General, the Chief Justice, the members of the Judicial and Legal Services Commission, the Public Services Commission, and so on, whose salaries and emoluments are in fact specifically protected. And since other offices are not protected, then it was argued that since they were not mentioned, their salaries could in fact be reduced during their working life. And it is our understanding that those are the two main grounds on which the judgment was given.
I think reference was made to some the nature of the contract between the Crown and the employee.
Yes, there was a reference to that. It wasn't developed fully as far as we understand it. But it would seem to suggest that there is a contractual relationship between the public officer or the civil servant and the Crown. And at common law, it would appear to us that that can be varied at will by the Crown, dismissed at will. But the Chief Justice did not go into that particular matter fully.
Now, Mr. Frost, this ruling has, in a sense, sent a panic through the public service, among public servants, and of course, this includes teachers as well, because we have been professionally socialized into thinking that as permanent employees of the Crown, that we enjoy a certain entrenchment, a certain insulation against certain things, so that we were brought to believe that security of tenure is something that was guaranteed. We were brought up to believe that our pension rates were always intact and could not be touched. What is the situation now, given this ruling?
Let me start with the last one first, pensions. It is quite clear that teachers, public officers, do not enjoy pension as an absolute right. That is specified in the law. There is no doubt about that. We have known it for some considerable time. At least one union has passed a resolution demanding that particular section of the Act be amended. It has been brought up on more than one occasion with the government. While the law says it's not an absolute right and one therefore cannot guarantee that one will get that or the gratuity, nevertheless, the history has been that no one has been deprived of their pension in normal circumstances. That is, if they were dismissed for cause and therefore they forfeited their pension rights, that was one thing. But officers having worked a full life and gone out with an unblemished record, we have no indication of anyone who has not been given pension or gratuity. So in a sense, the comfort was in the experience. Turning to the first point, that is the question of security of tenure. As I mentioned earlier, the Chief Justice did not go into whether the Constitution does protect the public officer in the way in which some of us believe it might do or should do. That is to say that we have a right to continue employment unless that employment is terminated for cause, or if it is not terminated for cause, then there would have to be exceptional grounds and the whole question of compensation and so on would arise. One thinks in the case of the former headmaster of the Lodge School, whose services were terminated, but then he was not a public officer in the sense in which persons are public officers now. And therefore, I think that that is a matter which still lies before the, or would lie before the courts. But I would also wish to say that this is a first judgment, and it is perhaps premature to believe that if it goes all the way to the Privy Council, that it may not be overturned. We believe that there are certain parts of the judgment which are still subject to question, and we would hope that at the next stage, or the third stage, that the variation in the decision will be the one which we were looking forward to.
There are those, Mr. Frost, who would want to suggest that the coalition and trade union journey speaking in Barbados need to put the whole question of constitutional reform tops on the agenda. How would you respond to that?
A constitution is a dynamic piece of legislation, and all legislation is subject to change, to be defined and redefined as time goes on and as deficiencies and weaknesses are shown up. And if, in fact, there is a weakness in our constitution, then obviously it is in our interest to have that weakness corrected. But then remember, whatever changes and alterations we make, with the knowledge that we have now, a situation may come along later on where that very constitution is itself found wanting. And we shouldn't believe that because we have had a judgment given here in this particular matter, that if we rewrote parts of the constitution, that it would necessarily solve all matters of security of tenure and the protection of office. Because perhaps a situation that we do not envisage may arise, whereby much the same situation that we are in now will happen. I don't think anybody in 1966, in framing the Constitution, anticipated that anybody would at any time reduce the salary of the holder of a public office. We have many instances where the office has had the salary revised, in some cases downwards at a regrading exercise, but the holder of the office never had his salary reduced to his disadvantage.
So before we get to the actual Privy Council, you seem to be suggesting, Mr. Frost, that the main hope now for civil servants lies with the ruling from the Privy Council. Is that your assessment?
Well, we have the local Court of Appeal first, and we would like to think that when the arguments are put forward that we will be able to persuade them. But if that is not possible, then we feel duty-bound to go to the final arbiter. That you start on a legal process, and it seems to make no sense to begin that legal process and not carry it to its logical conclusion. And when it has gone the whole way and a final judgment has been made, if it goes against you, then you know precisely the limitations of the Constitution and the limitations of your service.
Well, we want to thank you for listening to another program of Educators Once More, Educators Forum Once More. We ask you to join us now weekly on Star Radio on and 790 VOB for your special date with education. I'm Matthew Friday for the Committee of the National Forum on Education.
Tomorrow. and right.